Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Muddy Knees Media.
This Christmas slash Hanukkah slash Winterval slash holiday season, The Athletic wants you to bog off. Because when you buy one annual subscription, you'll get another one for free. And similarly, when you gift a year's subscription, you can get one for yourself at no extra cost. So wave goodbye to 2020 and say hello to 2021 by sharing the gift of The Athletic's unrivaled football coverage, with analysis and in-depth features from the very best writers around, exclusive Q&As with Athletic staff, and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. Find out more and sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Madrid, Munich, Milan. We talk big cities back on top. Plus, Europe's fastest goal ever, Papu as a Rolling Stone, and big problems at Lille Old Lille. All that, plus all the rest of the continental news in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener, and welcome to the show. It's the 22nd of December, Christmas around the corner, but our continental content continues with our bunch of contributors. They are James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
Alvaro Romeo.
Hello.
Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
And yes, Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
Oui. Voila. Everybody good?
Yeah, all good, James. Excellent. Nothing to complain about. Life is brilliant. It's never been better. I think when the history books are written about this period, it'll be that they never had it so good. I mean,
possibly from a future perspective. Yeah, I don't know, but I tell you who is enjoying life at the moment. That is teams from Madrid, Munich, and Milan, the big metropoli of football. Back on top, no? Munich on top in the Bundesliga. The two Milanese sides, number one and two in Serie A. It's the same in Madrid. Hey, Alvaro.
It is, and I don't know if these Atletico and Real Madrid, they are up to giving the level they gave in 2014 and 2016 when they reached the Champions League final, but I think the title race is going to be between them both.
Okay, let's get your moments of the weekend. Jules.
It has to be Presnel Kimpembe's last-ditch tackle against Lille at the end of the Lille-PSG game, clash of the top of the table. It was 0-0. He'd been quite cagey, to be fair, although PSG were dominated and could have won that game. But it's 0-0. It's a counter-attack for Lille. They're 4v1. Kimpembe, who's Superman, he's on his own. He pulled his hamstring. And you could see because the stride of his run changes. And yet, even with that, he still manages to pull out one of the most incredible tackles you would ever seen to block Burak Yilmaz, stop the counter-attack, and avoiding, clearly, PSG to concede a goal, or at least to concede a big chance. So well done, Presnel. I mean, he got himself injured, of course, because he pulled his hamstring. So he'll be out for, I guess, 3 weeks. But it's a very Merry Christmas, Presnel.
All right. What do you think, guys? Greatest tackle ever made? Is that going to be up
surely
there in the Tackle Hall of Fame? Raf?
Hardly.
What? It was amazing.
He hasn't seen it, that's why.
Come on, you have seen it. But you also have to consider the game and the importance of the tackle. Come on. Surely they were more important.
I know, in the 85th minute.
Nah. Yeah.
Takes out three guys with one leg.
Well, I can think of the one from Jerome Boateng, the goal line clearance, Euro 2016.
Is that a tackle, though? I'm thinking of...
Yeah, that's a goal line clearance.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Let's move on from tackles. I think Kimpembe's right up there, myself.
Thank you.
Alvaro, what's your moment of the weekend?
Well, it could be Unai Emery's Villarreal being unbeaten for 17 games in a row, or Raúl de Tomás in the Spanish second division scoring from the halfway line, but it has to be Lionel Messi equaling Pelé's record of 643 goals with the same club.
Right. And a weird way to do it, no, by missing a penalty.
Yes, he did. The good thing is that there was over there a teammate to fight for the ball again, and Lionel Messi scored with a header. And I believe that this is the first goal Messi has scored with his head in 3 years as well. So it was quite an unusual goal for Lionel Messi, yes.
All right.
Is Messi real? Because we keep seeing this. Like, he scores exactly the same goal as Maradona did for, was it Newell's Old Boys? Like, carbon copy, days after his death. And then he celebrates in exactly the same way as that iconic photo of Pelé from Brazil. He feels like a glitch in the Matrix still. You know, I think the next thing that's going to happen in 2020 is, I don't know, someone goes in for a tackle and we see he's like a Terminator kind of style. But beneath the skin, there is some kind of...
Rafa, help James out here.
When he scored his first ever goal, he scored that first ever goal a minute after he got cancelled, an identical goal.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you remember that against Albacete in 2005. That was impressive as well. So he scored basically the same goal twice, and one of them was not cancelled.
Glitch in the Matrix. Right. Rafa, your moment of the weekend.
Fairly unoriginal, but it has to be Robert Lewandowski last minute strike. Comes off a deflection of Jonathan Tah, but it is the goal that wins the game for Bayern at Leverkusen in the last minute. Is the goal that puts Bayern top of the table heading into the Christmas break. So the classic Bayern denouement of a game where they perhaps shouldn't have won, but somehow did.
All right. I think we're going to say Marcus Thuram.
Yeah, we'll talk about Marcus Thuram.
You know.
Yeah, that wasn't very nice. We'll come on to that later on. But James, your moment of the weekend.
Well, I've already been. I think you must have missed it because it was so quick. It was like Rafael Lau's goal of the weekend. 6.7 seconds, the fastest in the history of Serie A.
Not only that, James, but according to Gazzetta today, the fastest in any of the top five leagues ever. And they've got the numbers to prove it. 6.76 for Rafael Leao. In La Liga, do you know what the fastest is in La Liga?
Do I have to guess? Or I think it was Joseba Llorente in 2008.
You are absolutely right, Alvaro.
Yeah?
You're through to the next round. 7.22 seconds. In the Premier League...
He just Googled that, that's why.
Okay, what about Liga?
We could see him reading his laptop.
Anyway, Liga, Jules... I'll tell you, this is taking too long.
Is he still Graham Ricks? Hang on, I'm going to Google it like Alvaro.
Look, can I tell you?
Take some time.
Yeah, go on, tell me.
8 seconds, Michel Rio.
Michel Rio, of course, in Graham Ricks' team.
Paris born and bred.
No, I don't think so.
Rafa, the fastest in the Bundesliga.
You tell me.
Two of them, Kevin Volland and Karin, who's this?
Demirbay.
No, Bellarabi.
Oh, Karen Bellarabi, yeah.
Yeah, in 2014, and Kevin Volland in 20, looks like this is very small print, but it's 9 seconds anyway. Premier League, Shane Long for Saints against Watford in 2019.
Did he take longer than everyone else? Or?
Brilliant. That's a pretty vintage set of moments of the weekend. Let's start getting a little bit more in-depth on some of those stories next.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend. Brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4+ fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
So, the Bundesliga, Rafa, Bayern Munich on top of the table at Christmas after that mighty win away at Bayer Leverkusen. It was Leverkusen's first defeat of the season. It was, what, the seventh straight time that Bayern had gone behind in a game, and they haven't lost any of them, winning this one with a brace from Lewandowski after Patrick Schick's fantastic opener.
Beautiful goal from Patrick Schick. And as you said, this has been a bit of a pattern for Bayern this season. Seven times they started and found themselves 1-0 down early on, you know, halfway through this half as it happened. And I think it's been a bit of a hallmark of their season, really. This is not a coincidence. Bayern have looked pretty sluggish, pretty tired. The game's not really working defensively and attacking-wise. And Leverkusen actually played really well. They disrupted Bayern. Bayern had no sense of rhythm. They really missed their usual midfielders, Goretzka and Kimmich. Kimmich at least came on and made a difference in the second half. But Bayern kind of just through sheer willpower and you know, mentality.
Bad goalkeeping.
And defensive mistakes from Leverkusen managed to find a way to win this game. But you could see just how spent a force they were at the end of this year. Against Wolfsburg in midweek, it had been a similar story. They barely won the game. But for the opposition, it's pretty demoralizing if a Bayern team with injuries, with tiredness, with all these issues, still managed to beat the two teams that were unbeaten until a week ago in Wolfsburg and Leverkusen and find themselves once again top.
Lewandowski's second, coming in the 93rd minute of the game. That gives him 47 goals in 44 matches in 2020. And also, picking up, as you probably saw last Thursday, the FIFA Men's Player of the Year, the best award. Manuel Neuer also picked up the best award as well. What was the reaction, though, Rafa, to Hansi Flick not getting the best manager award?
Yeah, I mean, as you'd expect, there were some people saying it was unfair. What else could he have won? He looked a little bit more upset than I thought he would. It seemed to matter to him perhaps more than people anticipated. But at the same time, I think there are legitimate arguments to be made why, as an individual coaching accomplishment, perhaps leading Liverpool to the first title in 30 years is slightly bigger than yet another treble for Bayern. Which
biographer of Klopp backs Klopp in award.
Yeah, shock. Yes.
I'm surprised you say that, though, Raf.
I like Flick as well. And I like, you know, it's not as if I don't like Bayern. But look, the vote between the two of them was tied.
Mm.
And it came to the amount of votes from the captains of the national teams, I think.
Okay.
And perhaps it was to be expected that they went for Liverpool and Klopp with a slightly more international footprint than Bayern.
Rafa, the game at the weekend, meantime, beating Bayer Leverkusen, is that one of those significant results in the title race? Is this where Bayern take command again?
Well, the manner of the win felt ominous and felt significant. But in points terms, it isn't actually that important yet. They've only played 13 games heading into this break, which is fewer than usual, much fewer than usual. And they're only 2 points ahead of Leverkusen and Leipzig. So yes, it looks as Bayern, you know, sort of are in control, but they also don't look invincible this year, and they've dropped enough points to suggest that maybe they can be beaten this year.
Rafa, what's going on with Leroy Sané meantime? Brought on and then brought back off again in this clash with Leverkusen by Hansi Flick.
Yeah, which of course was one of the main talking points. It's not something you see at Bayern very often. Players come off, of course, when they're injured. But he was taken off for sporting reasons, with Hansi Flick making the point that this was not designed to punish the player or to make sort of a big point about his perhaps lack of application, but because he felt that Jamal Musiala was a better option, and he didn't want to take off Thomas Müller, who he felt was irreplaceable, and Serge Gnabry, who he felt was improving in the second half. But, you know, I've written about this in The Athletic today, and the problem is, in many ways, even if you take Flick's statement at face value, it is still pretty bad, because it basically says that Sané is not irreplaceable. It says that Gnabry is more dependent and more trustworthy, and it says that a 17-year-old like Jamal Musiala, in Flick's opinion, will have more of an impact for Bayern when they needed a goal than Leroy Sané, who'd only come on 30 minutes earlier himself as a sub. So it shows you his position in the team, which is pretty low down sort of the order of importance. But what was interesting at the same time was that you saw players trying sort of to help him and support him, and Thomas Müller coming out with some very uplifting statements, if you will, saying that he should use it as motivation, that he believed that Leroy was close to sort of making it and that he wasn't worried about him at all. So I think within the club, within the team, there's still enough support for him. They don't see him as an outcast. But of course, Flick making such a move was always going to increase the speculation and increase the focus on him. And he has been, compared to the transfer fee that he's been bought for and some of the expectations, he has been slightly underwhelming. I don't think there's any any two ways about that.
Thomas Müller should give him one of those comedy nicknames, no? To cheer him up a bit.
Insane.
Yeah. Jules.
Surely it's deeper than that, Raf, right? Surely the attitude maybe at training, there must be something else than just he hasn't really worked out for him so far. Is there any sort of stories that you've heard where the problem is actually deeper than just who did Flick could take off or not take off in that game?
No, nothing about training. Again, nothing from the players themselves. He has a lot of friends in the team who really like him and who really wanted him to come. So I think there's still support from him for him. But Flick himself has repeatedly said in the past that he feels he doesn't work hard enough, doesn't do enough in terms of the pressing, doesn't track back enough. There were, you know, incidents in the game against Leipzig where he kind of gave up at the halfway line and then Bayern conceded goals and he's just miles away. It's these little moments that make it difficult for Flick to trust him, especially when you compare him to Kingsley Coman, who's been at such a fantastically consistent high level in all respects. He sets the benchmark at the moment, and Sané looks well short of that benchmark. If you're looking for a deeper agenda, if you will, there is perhaps something in the fact that Flick was never 100% convinced that Sané was the best buy for Bayern. He was agitating for Timo Werner for a long time. There was even sort of a disagreement between him and Hasan Salihamidžić, the sporting director, over that. But I don't think Flick is the kind of guy who would now use that sort of for political reasons to show that he was right all along. I think he generally feels that Sané needs to do better. There is something about a perception here, because Sané doesn't look like a guy who's trying very hard and, you know, can look a little bit lazy and a little bit sort of uninvolved and perhaps also lacks a bit of confidence after his lengthy injury. When you actually look at the numbers and the amount of pressing actions and so on, they aren't that bad. So I think there's something, a bit of a stereotype here being created that he needs to now break through to just being a bit more involved.
Well, that notwithstanding, Bayern are back on top. More Bundesliga chat to come, as we'll hear what happened to Borussia Dortmund under their new manager and get the latest on that Marcus Thuram shameful episode. Up next, Milan, darling.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
Panettone Sprint, that's the headline on Monday's Gazzetta dello Sport, hailing the two Milanese sides, Milan and Inter, who are now top two in Serie A, just 1 point apart after Inter's 2-1 victory over Spezia and Milan's record-breaking win at Sassuolo.
Quest'oggi, ecco il fischio dell'arbitro e seguiamo in diretta questo primo tentativo da parte della formazione ospite con Leao, il tiro al gol! Dopo il lancio di Çalhanoğlu sono passati pochissimi secondi e il Milan è già in vantaggio.
Wow, what was that?
Was that Speedy Leao getting his goal? I mean, it was one of those, you blink and you miss it, or as often happens when you're a fan going to a game or a journalist reporting on a game, you turn up, you get in your seat, and you find out that there's already been a goal. I mean, it was that quick, beating what Paolo Poggi's record from 20 odd years ago when he was playing for Piacenza against Fiorentina. Was it 8.2? I think was Poggi's record. But what I found interesting actually at the end of the game was Stefano Pioli afterwards saying, yeah, we have four schemes that we use from kickoff. This is one of them. So it was something that they'd worked on in training and executed really well. And a kind of reminder of the talent that Leao has. Leao's had moments where he's looked like he's about to really catch fire as a potential superstar. He was, you know, the kind of new strategy that we've seen at Milan over the last 2 years, where they've prioritize signing talented young players with high upside. He's the most expensive one of them that they signed from Lille. And I think what was really statement-like, not in, only in the goal, but in this win, was that once again, Milan were without Zlatan. They were without Ante Rebic, Ismail Benacer, Simon Kjær. So the entire spine of the team. They lost Tonali at halftime as well to injury. And yet for the first 35, 40 minutes, they played really well. It's the second youngest team that they played this season. And they keep getting younger, Milan. I mean, it was, I think, average age of 22. Teo Hernandez again. I mean, this was one of the themes that the Italian press picked up on Monday. These two former Real Madrid fullbacks who are having potentially transformative effects on their teams. I mean, I think Teo more so than Hakimi with Inter, although Hakimi had a big weekend in blue and black. To see Milan kind of overcoming all of the problems that they've had and pulling out a win when they've drawn their last couple of games. I think they were unlucky not to beat a poor Parma side the other weekend when they hit the woodwork four times and had one goal disallowed. But it was big for them because Inter are coming. Inter have won six straight, and yet this win keeps Milan top going into this big game against Lazio in midweek. Mm.
Yeah, Lazio who lie eighth, but they are only 3 points off the top four themselves after a mighty victory over Napoli, who have hit a bad run of form. 2-0 it was at the Stadio Olimpico. Ciro Immobile once again opening the scoring. That's now 12 goals in his last 13 appearances in all competitions. Lazio with this victory ending a pretty poor run of results themselves. Napoli announcing a ritiro, because it's that time of year, isn't it?
It went so well last time. It was, last November, I think, when they went into ritiro after the Salzburg game and the players mutinied. That's still in dispute, actually. I mean, we might get to at some stage talking about players who are on the move in January. One of them will be Arkadiusz Milik, the Napoli striker who's hasn't played at all this year after not signing a new contract and then not moving in the summer. There's some disputes that need resolving between him and the club. One is about this fine that the club levied against the players for the mutiny that we're talking about, which kind of accelerated the end of Carlo Ancelotti's time at the club. And the other was going to advertise a restaurant for a mate, I think, in Poland. And you have to inform Napoli of those sort of things because they control everyone's image rights. But yeah, they're going into ritiro, which I think is a little bit of an overreaction, really. It comes on the back of a week in which they've lost to Inter and Lazio. But in the Inter game, they played well. Insigne then lost his head, got sent off. This game, okay, they didn't really show up. They were poor. But, you know, on the whole, I think, given Napoli without Dries Mertens at the moment, without Osimhen, who won't be back until after the new year, after dislocating his shoulder, it does seem to be, it seems typical of Napoli at over the last year, really, to take this kind of decision.
As you say, Lazio, who beat them at the weekend, taking on Milan in what could be a very significant game on Wednesday. Tuesday, we'll see Juve up against Fiorentina in one of the classic grudge rivalries, which is a kind of both ends of the table kind of clash this time around, given how Fiorentina's form has been going. We'll talk more about Juventus later, because next up, we've got a hot date with Paris.
Well, the fans who are back in the ground today for the first time are making a lot of noise, despite being spread out all the way from pitch side to the highest tier.
Yeah, I'm not sure they should be there, Mark.
Why is that, Steve?
Well, you're not allowed to watch a game in the highest tier, are you?
Stadiums might not yet be full, but Paddy Power's offers are at full capacity. If one leg of your 4+4 ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football and all markets. The ACCA Cracker from Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Min odds 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Paris, Jules, it's you. You're on.
Yeah.
Big game this weekend. Lille against Paris Saint-Germain. And there was little to talk about, really. 0-0 in this one. The point enough to put Lille back on top. Paris Saint-Germain stay down in third place. Jules, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, they had no Neymar who was out injured. Mbappe was not fit enough to start, so he only played the last 15 minutes on his birthday. He was 22 on Sunday night. And but I thought it was interesting in the sense that it was a cagey game as well. It was very tactical. I don't think Lille took too many risks. Usually it's a very attacking-minded team. I think they wanted to be a bit more cautious on Sunday night, and you would understand why. And PSG, without Neymar and Mbappé, is obviously a very different team. But they showed a lot of collective strength, I thought, in that game. They dominated. They had a lot of the ball. They created some decent chances. Moise Kean could have had a goal, maybe. Angel Di Maria played better than he had in the last few weeks. And Tuchel said on Saturday that maybe the fact that he's out of contract in the summer and yet the negotiation with PSG and Leonardo around a new deal haven't come through yet. Maybe that's why it's bothering him. That's why he was not really at his level in the last few games. But he played well, I thought, on Sunday night. But we've moaned all season about this lack of collective unity of that team and that the fact that they don't really play together. And yet, when they don't have the individual brilliance of Neymar and Mbappe, there's something missing as well, which is really strange. But they are that collective strength, but not the individual brilliance of Mbappe and Neymar, and they miss that as well. In the end, it was a draw. I think a draw that keeps Thomas Tuchel in his place for now, at least. They will have a big meeting during the winter break after the last game of the year in next week. Well, in midweek, sorry. And then they will see what they do with him. But a defeat, I think, would have been the end of him. Now, because they could have won the game quite easily and they didn't lose it, I think he might have a chance to finish the season.
Jules, their record in big games, at least in Ligue 1, is surprising this year, given what everyone's kind of perception of Ligue 1 is. Given that we saw the draw against Lille at the weekend, they lost to Lyon and Marseille at home. They lost to Monaco in the second half. I mean, in three of those games, they haven't even scored.
Yeah.
It's very unusual for super dominant PSG in what people think is a farmers league, but as we're seeing is much more competitive and difficult than people give it credit for.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's as we mentioned in last week's show after the Lyon defeat, first time that Lyon win at the Parc des Princes in 14 years. Marseille was the first time in 11 years that they won at the Parc des Princes. So it's been a very disappointing season in those kind of games, and the fact that they're still very much, you know, they're just 1 point behind Lyon and Lille and slightly ahead of Marseille, who have two games in hand, despite losing those games or drawing at Lille, it still shows that in the rest of the game they've been pretty good. But yeah, it's very strange that in that mini league, if you want, of that top four, they're way below everybody else, you know. So it makes for a very interesting second half of the season.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily tight. Three teams, just 1 point separating them. However, how much of a second half of the season are Lille, for example, going to have, Jules? Aditya Siddharth asking, could you elaborate a bit more on the issues Lille are facing? Are they going to be forced to sell players in the next window?
Yeah, so the club has changed ownership on Friday night, where Gerard Lopez, the former owner, had to sell the club technically to an investment fund from Luxembourg, really close to Elliott, who have loaned money to Gerard Lopez before to buy the club. So Elliott, although they don't own the club as such like they do with Milan, they still very much own the club because they own the loan and the money that Lille have been bought with. And they basically didn't believe that Gerard Lopez could reimburse the money that he borrowed and the debts and all of that. So they forced him to sell. He sold to someone who's really close to them, who's really close to JP Morgan, who not so long ago also put some money in at Lille. So between friends, it changed hands. Christophe Galtier on Sunday night was really happy in the way his own players and his own team, the Lille manager, stayed focused on the game and didn't let everything that's happening around the club disturbing them, bothering them. We know that Luis Campos will leave the club as well, the sporting director, the highly praised sporting director, because he was linked to Gerard Lopez, not to Lille. So he's there on the market for any club who's looking for a very clever and well-connected sporting director, director of football, scout, whatever, and his team. Mark Ingler, who's like the CEO pretty much, he's staying on the board, but not as a CEO anymore. We've got a new president in Olivier Letang, the former PSG sporting director. So a lot of changes off the field, but on the field, let's hope that that doesn't have a negative influence on them.
Well, because this is a club that you mentioned, James, Victor Osimhen going to Napoli, Pepe recently left, and Gabriel to Arsenal. There have been a lot of names going out the door. If they are in a financial crisis, is that going to be what we'll see in January as well?
Yes, so apparently they would be okay with not selling in January.
Okay.
You know, in France, we've got our own financial fair play, the DNCG, who is very, very strict when it comes down to clubs' accounts, not having debts, etc., etc. Everything has to be very controlled and under control. And for Lille, it seems that they would be happy with the club not selling in Jan, despite the around 60 to 80 million pound debts, and wait for the summer to sell players like, I don't know, Soumaré or Renato Sanchez or Ikone or Bamba, those kind of players who will bring them a lot of millions of euros. So that would be great, because this is a team that has a shot to win the league for sure. They can also do very well in the Europa League, I think, even if they have a tough next round against Ajax. But I think they can still go far in that competition too. They've got a great manager in Christophe Galtier. So they've got great assets, and if you break them down in January, it would be a real shame. So let's hope that they can keep everybody together, at least until the summer, have a great second half of the season, maybe win the league, win domestic cup, maybe go find the Europa League. And then you know that some of the big clubs will come and get their best players, which is the business model anyway. But apparently they should be okay for January, which is great news.
Okay. But Lyon a level with them at the top of the table after their 4-1 win victory at Nice. Lyon looking the more likely team of the two to end PSG's reign, would you say? Memphis Depay?
Yeah, I mean, if he stays, because he might go in January. He's only 6 months away from finishing his contract at Lyon. If they want a bit of money, it's in January. They will be ready to accept between 5 and 10 million euros anyway. We know that Barcelona and Ronald Koeman were really keen in the summer. I'm not sure if it's still the case. And Memphis earns almost half a million in wages every month, so that's a lot as well for Lyon. So I think he might go in Jan, although I think it would be crazy to let him go. I think you could sacrifice that money for 6 months more and win the league, because as you said, they're very capable of winning the league. They have no European competition, unlike PSG and Lille, at least for now. They have a really good squad. Rudy Garcia suddenly looks like he knows what he's doing, which was not the case for, you know, for most of the time since he arrived at Lyon, and for most of his career, to be honest.
Jules,
come on,
League and
you
Cup
know,
double winner.
He gave you one good season at Roma, and then he became
such a
clueless
good
again.
Season though, and then he beat Man City, knocked them out of the Champions League.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Come on,
Pep Guardiola knocked himself out of the Champions League.
Love you, Rudy.
And Rudy can do it. Imagine if Rudy was doing it. I mean, I don't know how many years after he did it with Lille, but we'll do it with Lyon against this PSG, it would be great. So let's see. But they certainly have something going forward. That front three, the KTM, I would call it, Kadewere, Toko Ekambi, and then the M for Memphis, is pretty spectacular when they can play on the counter. It's a bit more difficult when they have the ball. When on the counter, they're wonderful. And then Memphis has that swag, hasn't he? He's got so much swagger, and we saw that on the penalty he scored.
Yeah, he scored an outrageous Panenka. Outrageous because it wasn't just straight over the keeper. He kind of Panenka'd it to the top right corner.
Yeah, I think he aimed. That was the aim. He aimed at the top corner. You know, usually you do it in the middle of the goal because the keeper is going to dive one way or the other. But no, he pushed the swag so far that he actually aimed for the top corner in a Panenka. So just imagine the trajectory of the ball to go into the top corner is incredible. And I don't care people who say that's a lack of respect, he shouldn't be doing this. I don't care. You score the way you want, and that was brilliant.
If you can't do it, the lack of respect is not doing it.
Very true, my friend.
That's what I think, because the fans also want to be entertained. That's what I think when every time they criticize Neymar for all those dribbling and all that. I mean, maybe it's a lack of respect not to be able to do that after 20 years of training.
Fans want to be entertained, but are they still going to be able to watch Liga on TV, Jules?
Yes, they will, James, but obviously that has been a big scandal back home. Mediapro, who bought the rights for the next 4 years, created a channel to show it. They had 8 games in Ligue 1 and 9 games in Ligue 2. Have stopped their channel. They've decided that they didn't want to pay the amount that they got the rights for because of the pandemic, because of different reasons, I think. They hadn't paid the last two installments, the two payments for the clubs, 170 million in October, 150 million in December. And the league said that we can't continue like this. So they decided to stop the contract with Mediapro. Mediapro will disappear in France, putting a lot of people without a job, which is also a big scandal. And then the league will have a new right appeal, or whatever you call it in English, you know, to for another channel to win the rights or buy the rights. And they will have, they will find someone else, whether it's Canal Plus or beIN Sport or RMC. Someone else will go there, maybe all three of them. The worst thing is that the clubs who've already been impacted massively, like everywhere else, but even more maybe in France, because we didn't restart last season, will beIN impacted even more financially by this incident. So it's a real shame.
Wow. So are the matches on air at the moment?
So yeah, they're on air on Telefoot, the Mediapro channel, until this midweek, when we'll have the last games of the year, and then they will go bust. And then for the start of January, when Ligue 1 restart and comes back, then there should be someone else. Oh, it's not should. There will be someone else. They will sell the rights in between now and the start of January to whoever offers the most, I guess. And it will be on another channel in January.
Wow, fingers crossed, eh, Jules? Next up, let's ask Alvaro what's up in La Liga.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Pistolero Luis Suarez. Alvaro, what's up in La Liga?
Many things, yes, many things. To start with, Atletico de Madrid is still topping the table. Real Madrid is chasing them. And you can see the table now. And the truth is that there are some disadjustments in the sense that Barcelona has a game in hand, Atletico de Madrid has two. So if they all win what they've got left to play, Atletico will be topping the table with 6 points over Real Madrid. But still, as I said in the intro, I think that it's looking like this season we have a two-horse title race. And at the minute, Atletico de Madrid looks phenomenal. They have recovered from losing against Real Madrid a couple of weeks ago. And
Would you say they look phenomenal against Elche?
They look phenomenal in general. And I've got
really?
Some stats to prove it, yeah. I mean, from
against
the numbers
Elche,
point
they look
of...
phenomenal. They were phenomenal against Elche.
From Simeone's point of view, that is a phenomenal display.
Okay, what do you think?
I do believe that numbers-wise, Atletico de Madrid, they are closer than ever to put up a good title fight. I tell you why. Because this season they have scored 24 goals in 12 games. They have conceded only 5. Last season, they scored only 51 goals. That is a much lower ratio. 2 seasons ago, they scored 55 goals. So that is the reason why they didn't put a fight until the end, because they weren't conceding many goals, but at the same time, they weren't able to inflict heavy defeats to anybody. So they weren't winning easy, which is what defines good teams. And this season, if they continue with this, let's say, rhythm, they project 76 goals scored, 16 conceded, and those numbers are very similar to the numbers that they hit in 2014 when they won the title. So I think that this Atletico de Madrid means perhaps more than it looked at the beginning of the season, because they are still keeping the defensive ability that they always had, but also they are scoring, they are bagging many goals.
All right. Well, 3-1 was the result against Elche this weekend. Real Madrid also with a 3-1 victory. That was away at Eibar. The Eibar goal was the pick of this lot. What a screamer from Kike García.
Yeah, Kike García, he has been so important for Eibar. He's their main scorer this season. But the truth is that the game started so well for Real Madrid that Kike García's goal was kind of a surprise in a way, because in the first 20 minutes, Real Madrid was phenomenal. Luka Modric ran the show all together with Toni Kroos, and full praise for Luka Modric this time, because his contract expires in about 6 months, and he's making all the merits basically to get a contract extension again for 1 year or two. And then Karim Benzema scored the first goal for Real Madrid. He has done so many times this season, and his contribution is majestic for Real Madrid. I mean, this calendar year he has scored 22 goals, and he has scored the 29% of Real Madrid goals since Zinedine Zidane came back, which is a bigger percentage than Cristiano Ronaldo ever scored for Zinedine Zidane. Of course, this is a lower score in Real Madrid, but the goals of Benzema matter in this Real Madrid.
I noticed Zidane saying afterwards that Benzema, who's now got 10 goals in 11 games against Eibar, is the greatest French striker ever. Jules, does that sound right to you?
It sounds like a right debate, for sure. I mean, it's him or Thierry Henry, to be honest. Mm. Some people say Jean-Pierre Papin, who in his time was obviously very, very excellent. David Trezeguet maybe has a shout too, but or Nicolas Anelka. But I think it's between Henry and Benzema. It depends, again, if you look at what one did with the national team, the other didn't. But the other one obviously was much better in terms of trophies at club level. So it's a very, very interesting one. I don't know. I think Karim Benzema, who, by the way, is 33 yesterday. That kind of age, doing what he does, is absolutely incredible, I think. And he deserves so much credit. I think this was a long time coming, I think, for Benzema, who was always an exceptional talent. But for some reasons, maybe one that is called Ronaldo, didn't really get the praise that he deserved before. I don't know. But certainly it's a big debate. I still think that maybe Thierry edges it slightly, although some days I think that Karim is the best ever because he can do so many things that Thierry could not do. So I don't know, it's a very interesting one.
It doesn't help either that basically a year after he arrived at Real Madrid, Jose Mourinho said that Karim Benzema was like a cat.
He said,
if I have to go hunting with my cat, I'll do it. Basically meaning that Karim Benzema didn't have the aggression or aggressivity or whatever it's called to go for the goals.
Yeah, not the first time that Mourinho has been wrong. Salah, yeah. Kevin De Bruyne, I mean, yeah.
On Real Madrid very quickly. Yesterday there was the ordinary General Assembly for Real Madrid, and the president admitted that the club had 107 million income less than expected. And he confirmed as well that the players, and not only in football, but in basketball as well, they had to cut their salaries at 10%. So basically, Real Madrid doesn't have the debt that Barcelona has. No way. In fact, last season they had a little bit of a revenue. But still, their finances are a bit compromising. And maybe that's why he was talking about it. And the Super League concept was floating in the atmosphere, if that makes sense. He didn't refer to the Super League exactly, but he said that the football needs a new format to make it more competitive, more exciting, and that Real Madrid cannot delay that reform from happening because it must happen.
Wow, okay. Imagine that their friends at Barcelona are probably in a hurry for something like that as well. We've seen them lending their support in the past. The Barcelona with a 2-2 draw at Valencia this weekend. You mentioned Lionel Messi equaling Pelé's record of most goals for one club, 643 with that header. There was an outstanding volley from Ronald Araujo, which is well worth checking out. But I see that afterwards Ronald Koeman accused, or at least he's reported to have accused, Ricky Puig of leaking information from the locker room. I don't know how we know this, actually.
Yeah, That's tricky. Who has leaked that? That would be the question. But the thing is that Ronald Koeman has still many friends in Barcelona because he played for the club, obviously. And I don't know how interesting and benefiting would be for Ricky to leak something like that. But the thing is that Ronald Koeman has found probably the weakest link, a player with no real experience in the team, a very easy target, if you may. And he's a very small person that you can show the power against, your power against. So I don't know if this is nice from Ronald Koeman, really. The truth is that Ronald Koeman told Ricky that he wanted him out on loan. Ricky Puig said, I'm staying at Barcelona because I believe that I can succeed here. He didn't leave, and now he doesn't play much. He doesn't play much, but any time he is on the pitch, he looks like a player who could easily be part of this Barcelona squad.
So is Ricky Puig the mole? Is he the one leaking all the stories to the newspapers?
Well, this is what Ronald Koeman accused him of in the locker room in front of his teammates.
Is he trying to lead a putsch?
I was waiting.
Now he's going to get the putsch.
Yeah. Wow, crikey. There you go. Barcelona are now fifth, 8 points behind Atletico Madrid, who have, as Alvaro mentioned, a game in hand on them. Atletico Madrid are playing this Tuesday against the former leaders Real Sociedad. Can Sociedad stop their slide, Alvaro?
Yes, they did. I mean, they are winless in 8 games. I know that they have found it very difficult to cover the absences of Oyarzabal, their best scorer, and David Silva, who has been in the sidelines as well. But I do believe that there is a chance that them both can play against Atletico de Madrid this Tuesday, and that is going to be a booster for Real Sociedad. So, yes, expect a difficult game for Atletico de Madrid, and yet I believe that Atletico is more mature, and they've got also the conversion rate of the strikers is much better. And this is so important, because Real Sociedad create as many goal opportunities. We saw that against Napoli, for example, but they struggle to score goals.
Will David Silva be back for this one?
It looks like he could be back. Potentially, okay. Yes. Let's say, I mean, in the newspapers, he would say that he's doubtful.
I see.
Like Oyarzabal is for this game, but he might feature. Yeah.
Okay, next up, we'll head back to the Bundesliga to catch up on a few more of the key stories ahead of the winter break.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Der BVB, Pass in die Spitze. Mokoko, Tor, Tor, Mokoko, Moko, 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 Moko.
Rafa, big game this weekend between Union Berlin and Borussia Dortmund. With all sorts of talking points. The youngest goal scorer ever in the Bundesliga. The ongoing success of Union Berlin. And the fact that Borussia Dortmund's problems don't seem to have gone away with Lucien Favre.
All of these things are true, James. Dortmund crashed to their first defeat in the Edin Terzic era. The second game of the interim coach didn't go according to plan when they went to Berlin and lost to Union. Again, in a fashion that had become a bit of a trademark for this Dortmund side, conceding from corners, conceding silly goals. And afterwards, Mats Hummels, a very angry Mats Hummels, called out his own players for lack of defensive focus without naming them. But he was really talking about Emre Can and Gio Reyna, who both lost their markers for goal one and two, respectively. Yeah, I mean, the fact that Youssoufa Moukoko scored his first goal in the Bundesliga was, of course, a nice a memento, if you will. But the defeat weighs heavily on this Dortmund side because they've slipped out of the Champions League places. They are increasingly worried that they will miss what is the absolute bare minimum target for the season to finish in the Champions League spot. And of course, it doesn't make it easier for them to pretend, or if you will, to hope that Terzic will be fine until the end of the season. So the pressure on the board to maybe, you know, think of alternatives if this doesn't work out is going to be increasing, and they have to hope that on Tuesday when they play against Braunschweig in the cup, which is a major target for this club, probably the most realistic title they can win, if they were to get knocked out there, we'd be looking at a real disquiet and unhappy Christmas.
They lie 8 points off Bayern now after that defeat. Meantime, Union Berlin doing fantastically. They're above them in the table. They're up in sixth place, which is pretty phenomenal stuff, no?
It is phenomenal stuff, and it's come without their talismanic striker, of course, Max Kruse, out injured. So for Union Berlin not just to play good stuff, but also to do it without the man that, as the narrative went, had transformed their football, was hugely impressive. And Urs Fischer, I think, can rightly claim to have overseen the most stellar work in 2020, not just saving Union Berlin from a drop when everybody at the beginning of last season felt that they would go straight down, but now taking them all the way to the fringes of the Europa League places and maybe even more. So, yeah, an incredible story, and made all the more remarkable by the fact that their neighbours, Hertha, are down at the other end of the table after a 4-1 defeat at Freiburg. And they're looking very nervously over the shoulder, thinking that they might actually get sucked into a relegation battle.
Crikey. Crikey. Other big talking points this weekend included RB Leipzig, who had a goalless draw with Cologne, confirming that they will be welcoming Dominik Szoboszlai from the similarly named RB Salzburg to their ranks come January. Schalke are now 29 Bundesliga games without a win and have had their second sacking of the season, Rafa.
Yes, Manuel Baum didn't last very long, didn't manage to win any games since taking over from David Wagner. And Schalke, as they often do in their most pressing moment of desperation, is to activate the Huub-Stevens protocol. It's now the fourth time that their best love manager in recent history has come back to stabilize the ship, but only until the end of the year. So he's not expected to be hanging around for too much longer. And now the question is, what will Schalke do when it comes to appointing the next one in line? Alex Zorniger, the former Stuttgart coach, is in contention there to take over. But with 4 points from 13 games, it looks very, very bleak in Gelsenkirchen.
Fourth time he's been back there. Does that remind you of anybody, James?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because Davide Ballardini, as we've been on air, has been confirmed as Genoa's new manager for the fourth time.
Fourth time.
All those things. Yeah, three certainties in life: death, taxes, and Ballardini somehow coming back to save Genoa. Right.
And a fourth certainty, he'll be fired the following November. Because he's yeah, kept them up each time, and then they always get rid of him. Poor
yeah,
chap.
It's madness. I mean, they got rid of him even when he got Piontek on that incredible hot streak, just to bring it back round to Hertha.
Yeah, there is a question for us in social media about who is an equivalent of Sam Allardyce in Serie A, Ligue 1, La Liga, Bundesliga. I don't know if that man can be.
Ooh, Davide Ballardini. He's quite club-specific, though. He doesn't really have that same rep of kind of Mr. Wolfing it up and down, or down
solving
the
problems.
Yeah. Anyway, so, Rafa, well, there you go. That was Schalke. But the other big story from this weekend in the Bundesliga was Hoffenheim's 2-1 win away at Borussia Mönchengladbach, which featured a very regrettable scene involving Marcus Thuram.
Yes, James. He spat into the face of his opponent, Stefan Posch. And of course, he apologized, and the club apologized on his behalf. And I think he will face a very lengthy ban, maybe up to 8 weeks even. It's never the nicest of things to happen, but of course, in Corona times, it's particularly unpleasant and horrible, really inexcusable. And I think the DFL or the DFB are going to come down pretty hard on him.
Right. It's not something he's shown much signs of before, this kind of behaviour, Marcus Thuram?
No, not to my knowledge. He's been very well behaved in Germany. One of the, you know, fairest strikers, really. Hardly ever picking up any suspensions or anything like that. So very out of character. I don't know what really happened to him. There's not even a suggestion that Posch said anything to provoke that reaction. At least I haven't seen any being mentioned. So he just lost his head.
Right. Although Karl-Heinz Rummenigge coming up with an original take on the situation.
Oh, no, let's not. Post-care. Please not.
Okay. All right, then.
It's all right, too then. Cringe.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, Hoffenheim taking the victory with a stoppage time winner courtesy of Ryan Sessegnon, who's there on loan from Spurs. Rafa, the Bundesliga shuts up shop now until the 2nd of January. Anything else we should know, to tide us over for the long, long, dark days ahead?
No.
No?
I think we covered it all. If there's anything else you want to know, James, you're always welcome to tune into the Starcast pod, of course, where me and Christoph Biermann will chew the fat, as it were, and go into a bit more depth.
And, of course, there's your excellent articles available on The Athletic. Well, there are one or two more stories we can wrap up from Serie A this weekend and ahead of the midweek round, and we'll do that next.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Serie A then, everybody, very tight at the top with Milan and Inter, just a point apart. Juve are in the mix there. Looks like being a kind of classic old school top three between those three clubs. And then you've got another group, five teams separated by only 3 points, battling for the lost Champions League place, as it looks at the moment. Roma, Napoli, Sassuolo, Atalanta and Lazio. Atalanta, who turned those frowns upside down this weekend with a whopping 4-1 victory over Roma. And what was interesting about this, James, or one of the things, was that it didn't involve Papu Gomez.
Well, they're becoming used to that. I mean, he wasn't in the starting 11 for the Juventus game in midweek. He was pictured smiling, laughing with Paulo Dybala, and then also kind of singing along to the Juventus anthem, which raised a few eyebrows. And then he came on and actually contributed to them getting back into that game. Atalanta played well second half, as they did in the second half against Roma. They came back from behind. Dzeko had put the Giallorossi in front, Spinazzola hit the post, and then Gasperini went to his bench at halftime, brought on Josip Iličić, brought on Luis Muriel, and Muriel scored, as he so often does from the bench. But I think the main takeaway from this game was it felt like for the first time since March, Josip Iličić was well and truly back. Iličić with a couple of assists and got a beautifully kind of balletic goal, dribbling through the Roma defence to put the game beyond them. And it was interesting after the game, you know, I mean, Duvan Zapata was asked, this was a big win post-Papu, and he was quite confrontational. It's like, what do you mean post-Papu? Papu's here. Papu's our captain. But the club put out a statement on the eve of that game saying that they were backing the manager and that Papu was definitively out of the squad. You know, what precipitated that, we don't really know. Was it, for example, him, you know, miming along to the Juventus anthem? Was it a meeting with his agent and asking about, you know, what's best for Papu's future and what kind of an exit strategy can they decide on? But, you know, I think both Atalanta and Lazio did the top three a big favour this weekend, because I would say that Milan, Inter and Juve now are in fuga, as they say. They're escaping the rest of the pack. And it looks very old school, James. It looks like the big three on the podium and in contention for the title, really, for the first time, I would say, since 2011, because that was between Milan and Juve. I think to go back for a three horse race, you probably have to go back to 2004, 2005, 2006, something like that. So it's interesting. The old order is reestablished.
Yeah, indeed. So it's a shame about Papu Gomez, though, and all that Atalanta fairy tale a little bit unraveling. He was such a kind of key component of their success. Peter Jones asks, if Papu Gomez leaves Atalanta, what's a likely destination?
Well, his preference is apparently to stay in Italy and stay in Lombardy, you know, where Bergamo is. So
Monza.
That would be amazing. Balotelli, Boateng, Papu. No, I think Milan or Inter. Now, from what I can gather, you know, Milan, it has to be an exceptional player for them to break their kind of their policy on signing young players. Zlatan in that regard is considered a freak, who's worth doing it. And Zlatan was quote-unquote free as well. So I can't see that happening. Inter, it feels like classic Inter, you know, just like a year on from signing someone who plays in exactly the same position as Papu for 20 million, even though, you know, a few days after signing him, he would have been available to sign for free ahead of the summer. I'm talking about Ericsson, of course. They go into the market and end up spending more money on a guy who I think is almost 33. Now, you know, I rate Papu really highly, but I think this is another reason why some clubs would be cautious. I think including Milan is that outside of that wonderful Isola Felice, as they call it in Bergamo, away from Gasperini's tactics and his kind of unique playing structure. Players at Atlanta tend not to do as well away from Atlanta as they did with them. So, in that regard, Inter probably wouldn't really care all that much about that. But I'd have some reservations about whether he'd be a good fit for Inter. I don't see Papu going to the Premier League. He did have a massive offer from Saudi Arabia back in the summer, which he turned down and signed a new deal with the club. So, you know, unless one of those clubs comes back in for him. But, you know, I think the reason Papu turned that down wasn't only because of his affection and loyalty to Atalanta. It was because at his age, he wants to play for a contender. He wants to play for a team in the Champions League.
Hmm. Juventus, who had that 1-1 draw with Atalanta last week, have Fiorentina coming up on Tuesday, and they are fresh from a 4-0 win at Parma, which adds a little bit more fuel to the notion that things are coming together under Andrea Pirlo, as long as he can keep Morata and Ronaldo fit anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think McKennie and Ramsey, keep them fit too, because I was kind of scratching my head writing a piece this week about, you know, sort of players who've kind of stood out, who not a lot was expected of. McKennie, I think, is certainly one of them. I mean, signing him, it took everybody by surprise. You know, even the kind of transfer guru reporters like Di Marzio and Fabrizio Romano, that, you know, that it was very, it felt very last minute that they were taken aback by it. And he's been brilliant in terms of just knitting this team together offensively. But I think this was the most convincing domestic performance that Juventus have put in. You know, it's to put alongside the performance against Barcelona in the Camp Nou as being the kind of best of Pirlo so far. And, you know, we have to see if they can do it against better domestic opposition. I'm not going to count Fiorentina as that, because Fiorentina have been dreadful, played way below expectation so far this season, find themselves, what, down in 16th place without a win in 8 games, even though they've brought Cesare Prandelli back to the club. But, you know, we need to see what this unbeaten Juventus side in Serie A does when they face Inter, face Milan, actually face Napoli, whose appeal for that 3-0 defeat that the Sporting Tribunal gave them for not showing up for their game against Juventus back in, what, September time. Their final appeal, I think, is due to be heard today. I think Juventus were brilliant in that Parma game. So, yeah, things coming together for them just as we about to head into the winter break.
Okay. There is a quick question here from Richard saying, what has happened to Fiorentina this season? I say a quick question, it could be anything, but are they in a relegation battle?
Well, they were in a relegation battle the season before last, surprisingly, when it went down to the final day and they played out that 0-0 draw with Genoa. Fiorentina should not be in the position that they are in now. If you look at their wage bill, I think it's seventh in the league, and there's a big drop-off between them and everybody else, and that includes the likes of Atalanta and Sassuolo, who continue to punch above their weight. I think with Fiorentina, it's related to the situation that they have up front with the strikers. They've got three very talented young kids up there, Vlahovic, Kwame, and Cutrone. I don't know why they ended up bringing Cutrone back to Italy from Wolves. They don't need him. They need, in my opinion, an experienced centre forward who can take the pressure off those strikers, who's got a guaranteed record of scoring goals in this league. Call it the Zlatan effect that we've seen at Milan, where you bring in a guy who just takes absorbs all the kind of spotlight and allows the other people to grow around him. Frank Ribéry can do that to an extent, but he's not a goal scorer. Certainly not on a kind of regular enough basis. And he's struggled since coming back from that ankle injury to play three games a week consistently. You can't do that at his age unless you're Zlatan. So yeah, I think and they find it hard to snap out of this cycle that they're in, where they inherited Montella, they sack Montella and bring in Yakini supposedly as a stopgap, but then Yakini does okay enough basically for them to basically confirm him for the following season, when really no one is truly convinced by Yakini, and then they sack Yakini in October. And can't bring in kind of a guy who's going to make a dramatic improvement. So they bring Prandelli back. And it feels like they're again in this cycle where they're in a stopgap or holding pattern. And I think until they get to the summer and be maybe a little bit more decisive and say, you know what, Prandelli, thank you very much. If he's still around, we're going to go for an Ivan Juric. We're going to go for someone who's more of an up-and-coming manager, more in tune with the trends in tactics today, then they'll probably still disappoint.
All right. Well, they're only 4 points above the bottom three, and the situation could, of course, get worse at the hands of Juventus this Tuesday evening. All right. A midweek round then in Serie A, and there's action taking place around Europe. So we're going to be reconvening on the 29th for a bit of a roundup of everything that's been happening.
Between now and then, there's also a Matthias De Ligt interview, which will be going up on The Athletic on Christmas Day. So look out for that.
Ooh, De Ligtful. Nice.
And maybe, James, by next Tuesday, we know if Messi's staying at Barcelona or not, because he is giving an interview on the 27th.
Is it via Burofax?
Not this time. It's been recorded already, so I'm sure that the editors of that interview, they already know if Messi is going to stay at Barcelona or not, because that question will be asked, of course.
Schrodinger's interview. Crikey. Jules, what else will we know come the 29th?
We will know who's a French winter champion.
Well, that's great. Okay, and Rafa will know what you've got for your holiday gift. Yeah, that you've received.
I know that now.
Oh, do you? Excellent. That's great, because there's nothing worse than uncertainty when it comes to presents at this time of year. I hope everybody has a lovely Christmas stroke festive break. And as I say, we'll get back together again for the 29th. Listener, do join us for that, and we can see out the year in style. What a year it's been. And we'll have a special goodbye Totally Football Show European edition then on the 29th. For now, from Jules, James, myself, Alvaro, and Rafa, it's
Joyeux Noël.
Fröhliche Weihnachten.
Buone feste.
Euguerion.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.